Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Gang, 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 geek, 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 geek.
The only way to be
on Sci-Fi. Swing,
swing, swing, swing. Joy, 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 94.9.
Look, it's great to have you on Sci-Fi and Squeam. Welcome to the show, Galapagos. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Now, you're going to be at Lakebit on the 27th of September this month here in Melbourne at Acme. This is part of Game Masters, which is coming to an end, unfortunately. Game Masters exhibition about all the things a lot of us love, which is video games and playing video games and the culture behind that and the makers and developers, etc. But also having music is pretty cool. And you slot into that perfectly, I think.
Yeah.
Can you describe your music?
It's generally a very difficult thing to do.
But, yes.
I don't know. I guess within in the context of this show, it almost seems appropriate to kind of think about the video game reference and about how I always loved playing video games. And a big part of that was the sound and all the sound effects and stuff like that. So as much as my music doesn't really sound like video game music, it definitely kind of takes cues from there. I mean, I generally make instrumental music. More and more these days I've been singing over my own songs and kind of bringing in all those kind of different elements. But I guess the music itself is quite experimental electronic, I guess with pop elements, but generally quite out there and quite, I don't know.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
You know, look, I have been listening to it and I must admit, I thought, oh, and then played it again and I thought, no, this is the effect. This is what this is supposed to sound like.
Yeah,
I get it. And after about 2 minutes, I was just hooked. I was like, oh my God, this is great.
I think a lot of people, it takes a lot more than 2 minutes. But
okay.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's a style of music that takes, I think I took a long time to grow into playing this kind of thing and making this kind of music. So I don't expect that it's going to be a huge pop sensation because it doesn't grab you on a whim, you know. It doesn't, like, you don't hear it walking down a footpath and go, what is that? I guess, you know, I wouldn't say that about most music these days, but yeah, I've never really expected my music to be super accessible and super kind of pop oriented.
Yeah. No, I think it definitely does that. It's almost like, I thought, it's something that, I don't know how does it work with crowds of people? The response.
Oh, I mean, great. I mean, especially lately, the scene around kind of electronic music and more experimental things has been going incredibly, especially in Melbourne. It's a huge growing scene. And
yeah,
I've just recently got back from the States and the audiences there were fantastic and were really into it and really very open to the sounds. And granted, it's kind of, I'm probably playing music to an audience that's been exposed to experimental and electronic music and beat music more generally for a few years now. And it's not so much the new people, but I think with the record that just came out, it's been kind of great to get some more, I guess, indie and rock oriented people and more kind of a pop kind of influence, I guess, in my music is drawing in a new crowd and slowly getting younger people in particular kind of tuning into it and seeing what's going on. Yeah.
When you say younger people, you're joking, right?
Well, I don't know. I think it's becoming very apparent to me that
being
25 is not young anymore.
Oh, goodness.
I know. It's a slippery slope, I'm sure.
No, well, what is interesting is about, I say that how it works in crowds because after I reached, I think, the 4 or 5 minutes part of listening to one of your tracks and then moved to another one, I found myself feeling that this was quite something that was personal. Like I felt like it was more something that, oh, only I would get this. Do you know what I mean? And then when I, you know, sent it to another person, they said, oh, actually, I get what you mean. How could this play amongst a group of people? But if you say it is a growing thing and people are exposed to it.
Definitely. And I think that whole idea of personality and I guess, individualism coming across in my music is really important to me. And especially in a live context, the way I play live is very hands-on and it's quite improvisational. So I can kind of move things around in terms of what an audience is doing and in terms of, I guess, what kind of response I'm getting from a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that way, I feel like the personality and the kind of social nature of what I'm doing actually helps people get into it rather than necessarily making people think it's strange or push people away or anything.
Right, I get what you mean. Now I want to talk about how you make it, how you make these sounds. And you said that you do this live. Okay. That immediately I'm thinking, how hard is that?
Well, I mean, it's...
Or how easy is that? Is it easy technologically now to...
Yeah, I mean, technologically, there's a lot of amazing tools out there right now. There's not necessarily huge amounts of pre-made, ready-on-a-platter things for you. But, I mean, myself, I'm a programmer as well as a musician.
I see,
and so
right.
I've kind of written a little piece of software that was based off another piece of software that was available for free online. And so I now kind of release that to the general public for free, well, like by a donation only. And so I guess it's kind of through technology that I've been able to do the kind of music I want to do in that I can create my own tools and I can really, I guess, tailor exactly the way I want to perform music and I want to be able to interact with my own music and shape and move it over time. So that, I mean, that's what I do in a live setting. In terms of recording, it's quite a traditional process, really. It's just me sitting in my extremely tiny music studio, which is also my bedroom, and just playing around with keyboards and guitars and kind of recording things and occasionally using samples and things, so like off records or off tapes or anything like that, just for inspiration or for a little sound here and there. And so it's really just about using a computer to piece it all together and to kind of, make some bizarre puzzle out of everything that kind of hopefully makes sense.
Is some of it like happenstance? Do you get moments where you go, oh, that's not what I was envisioning it to be like, but that just seems to work? And
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think there's, sometimes you have a very particular and clear vision of what you want to do. But a lot of the time it's just, you're just playing around and I'm just often just sitting in my room playing guitar or messing around with a piece of software and all of a sudden it makes a bizarre sound that it's not meant to and it's like, oh, that's really cool.
Right.
How can I use that? And you grab that and you kind of save it or you immediately go on some crazy divergent path and end up making something entirely different to what you set out to do that's often 10 times better.
Right. Because I'm still thinking about your particular music when you're saying that, and now it's sort of making sense. Now, how on earth, I mean, how do you get down to deciding when a track is complete? Is a complete, organism, finished product? Or
I think it very often depends on the project. So, I mean, the record I put out recently, Commitments, it was all about trying to, I guess, have elements of live instrumentation and elements of vocals and samples and all those kind of things working alongside each other. And so I had a very clear kind of creative vision that I wanted to not just make simple sample-based music or not just record guitars and have that be it, but rather make a kind of bed of a track and then kind of layer up all those different elements and find a way to make kind of an ensemble of sound fit into a...
Right.
Into a particular piece. I mean, there's other things I've done which have just been really simple, like a sample off a record with drums, and that's the whole song.
Okay.
And so I think it's very much about just the aesthetic I'd be going for. So I don't know. It seems like a very natural thing where I just kind of I'm working away at something, and then all of a sudden it just clicks, and it's like, oh, okay, that's it. It's done. I don't need to add anything more, and then it just
enough
becomes about mixing it and making it sound better.
Okay. So that process, what are we talking about? Work hours?
Well, I mean, often
human hours.
often a track is, you know, I create a song in like, you know, 30 minutes.
Okay.
But then sometimes it'll take you maybe 10 to 20 to 30 hours on a given song, but often that's spread out over 6 months, yeah. You know,
okay.
Or longer, years sometimes. I mean, some of the tracks on that record are 2-3 years old, in that I came up with an idea in the past, but I never quite knew how to finish it. I never knew what to add or what to take away until a certain time, and it just, you know, it just happens, and you're like, oh, there it is.
Do you think it's too also because perhaps you didn't have the right sort of software at the time to maybe do things to it the way you were happy with it?
Yeah, partly. I think that these days I don't feel very restricted by technology at all.
Okay.
I feel like technology often makes things a lot easier, and it can sometimes make something sound a little bit better. But in terms of actually writing and I guess the compositional process and the process of piecing together a song in kind of a studio context is very, I don't know, it's just a very natural flow, and it kind of seems to be whatever's lying around, and it, you know, it's just like little sparks in your head that kind of tell you to do strange little things that kind of make it happen, rather than any piece of technology.
Okay,
I think.
So you might have like, I don't know, for example, a dozen different sounds that you've worked on in the past on file. Do you go, you're working on something, and go, wait a second, I know it would go well with that. It's something I did 8 months ago.
Occasionally.
Does that work?
Yeah,
does that
sometimes.
Happen?
I mean, I
don't know if you... I'm just trying to fish here, find how it works, because it's pretty difficult to actually describe your sound without actually the listener hearing it.
Sure.
So...
Yeah, I guess, yeah, by its very nature, it's hodgepodge, and it's all about, yeah, grabbing things that almost fit, and sometimes they don't really fit, but you can, I don't know, there's some little nuance in it that you really hear and kind of latch onto, and you're like, oh, those two things work together.
They fit.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah. And so,
how does that happen?
I don't know.
You must
know. The ghost in the machine. I don't know. It's just a... I mean, I come from a very... I mean, I studied jazz and I studied...
Oh, yes. One of my questions was going to be that. Are you a musician?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, I played guitar for... very seriously up until I was 21 or so.
Okay.
And so I did grades and all modern guitar stuff, so not classical, but all that, and I played saxophone and all those kind of things. But I guess that influenced my kind of sense of harmony and where kind of which notes fit together and why it is that certain sounds work.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, I think it's all, maybe it's because of that training, but it all seems just very natural. It just happens.
But you mentioned jazz.
Yeah.
What does jazz do? If people don't understand, I mean, jazz turned everything upside down, I think, for so-called Western music, because it's like a continual work in progress, and suddenly it can veer off. You know, you can have, I'm talking about the old school jazz, you know, Charlie Bird Park or something. Every time they play, obviously, it's going to be very different from the next time they played and so on.
Yeah, exactly.
That must have been an influence.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think that's one of the reasons why I find it very difficult to actually sit down in a studio and commit a song to tape. You know, often it's, for me, it's about it's about the palette of sounds.
Yes.
Like you were saying before, it's like, oh, I have these 12 sounds. Mm. And I often like just having them... having them kind of in one place and being able to kind of take things in and put things out and, you know, rework them and recontextualize them as you go. Mm. And so I think that's what my live show is about. It's about taking all those component parts and taking the sounds more generally and then being able to play them back with different rhythms or different harmony, like matching different parts of those sounds together.
Mm.
And so I think, yeah, jazz really influenced that kind of side of my production. In terms of it more generally, it definitely, in terms of the harmony and the way that, you know, you listen to jazz and lots of people listen to jazz and they're like, oh, it's too crazy, I don't understand it. Which I think, I find that a lot of the time. But there is something about it and something about, you know, somehow there's some really fine harmonic things that work together that you wouldn't think would. But
it's almost like a wonderful accident.
Yeah.
Almost like when you hear some Miles Davis, you go... this is just crazy. And then after 8 minutes, you go, No, it's reaching. It's reaching a point. It's reaching a point. It's going to get there. It's going to get there, and it does. And then you go, I've got to listen to that again. Yeah. You've got to put that track back on, and you go, and it's really great doing the housework too. I always found, God, what's the name of that album? The Miles Davis one. Oh, damn it. My brain's gone dead. It's been a long day.
That's okay. Kind of Blue? No?
No. Later, 1970. Maybe it was
Bitches
69?
Brew?
Bitches Brew.
Yeah, that's
a great
record.
I remember the first time I heard that. I was in a house, share house, or we call them flats. I'm from New Zealand, so they call them flats. So they're flats. And some flatmate, I think he might have been a musician actually at the time, he put this, you know, scratchy old record on. And it was okay for the first couple of minutes, it's fine. And then that trumpet started and it just went on and I said, take it off. Please, I'm trying to have breakfast here. It's Saturday morning, I'm a bit under the weather.
Yeah.
I had a late night. Take that bloody thing off. And then I couldn't. I said to him, can you put it back on? Please put it back on. After I had my coffee, sometimes. Put it back on. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe people made music like that.
Yeah,
that was my first time at, because I didn't get exposed to the much older jazz until I got exposed probably to the fusion stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Which was the totally crazy stuff.
Yeah, I think I went the other way. I went, you know, from the traditional.
Yeah, fusion, I get what you mean.
Fusion is it, you know. I just want to suck it all up and make new music with that somehow. I don't know.
And then, of course, I went from that and, like, looking at funk.
Yeah.
King's funk was just something else altogether, like something from another planet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. Great makes great B-grade sci-fi. That's for sure. Well, let's get back to you, though. I want to know where the name, and I guess our listeners want to know where the name Galapagos, I've been practicing, you see.
That's very good.
Where that comes from, the idea behind that.
The name has been a topic of contention before.
Really?
I think the story, mm-hmm. I'm not sure if this is completely
true.
The official story is that I was, at the time, very much into this band called Tortoise, who make music that, funnily enough, would work really well with video games, I think.
Because
I used to play Star Wars Jedi Knight and listen to Tortoise on repeat for like 8 hours at a time.
Oh, right.
It was amazing. but anyway, so I was listening to them and then for some reason got a remix record of theirs. Mm. And there's a track called Galapagos, as in the islands.
Yeah.
And there was some reference.
It's a typo.
Yeah, well, there's some reference in a game I was playing or something to Godzilla. And so I got thinking about, you know, nuclear mutation and taking, yeah, you know, like strain, like what happens. I mean, obviously there's like the Godzilla story, which is like a little lizard that turns into Godzilla.
Yeah,
it's like, well, what radiation. Else what else happened, you know, like what else happened when Godzilla got made? Maybe there was other animals.
Ooh.
And so I was thinking about it, and for some reason this song was on and I was like, oh, the Galapagos, as in some bizarre.
Well, the Galapagos, interesting enough, the Galapagos Islands, because they were so isolated, they were their own, I mean, Darwin, it wasn't Darwin, just, he was enthralled because you had species that you never had anywhere else, in an island that might have been a kilometre away.
Yeah.
You had a totally different species altogether.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think the Galapagos, the actual goose, exists on one of those.
Really?
Little islands.
Honestly,
yeah.
Wow. I can't believe I've never heard that.
It's quite a large goose, though.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's flightless. Yeah, this is the problem.
All right.
But it still makes that goose sound. That, I don't know, it's got a similar bill or something.
Yeah.
But have you heard of spoonbill? I mean, they're probably dub type of style.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess you call.
Yeah. I guess maybe they can come from a similar place. Similar
could be. Well, that ticked that box. Why the name? That's cool.
Yeah.
Very good. We've done that. Now, thinking again about back to the video games and stuff, you mentioned Star Wars in there, Jedi Knight game. And what other ones have you been influenced by? And do they, and how do they affect your music?
I think there's a few games in particular. I had I mean, I had an Atari when I was a real young kid, but cool. Then we got a Super Nintendo, and that was it. That was the platform that took video games from being something fun to being a complete entire obsession. And I don't think anything after that ever really grabbed me quite like the Super Nintendo. Well, 64 was good, but SNES was, that was it. Had a game, again, Super Star Wars. I love Star Wars for some reason.
Oh, that's great. I love Star Wars too. Yeah. I'm not sure about the prequels.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
But I still watch them. Do you know, I still revisit them.
Definitely.
Because I need to be sure that I don't like them.
Yep.
That's why I don't like them.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember now.
Yeah. For some reason, I love Empire Strikes Back, even though it's like the slowest moving movie of all time. Anyway.
It's gorgeous, though. Yep.
Yeah. It's an amazing, amazing show. But Super Star Wars is great because it's so difficult. And so you would spend hours and hours and hours doing like the same level over and over. The Sandcrawler. You like have to run through the Sandcrawler. It's like, it's horrible. But it's so good and it's so addictive.
Yeah.
So I guess that influenced me more from like a perspective of being excited about games. Yeah. But another game I played all the time was, what's it called? Something racing. It's really awkward because you're racing the car, but the screen doesn't turn when you turn. And so you have to you have to look at the screen and think about you want to turn left or right, even though your perspective doesn't change.
It's really annoying.
Rock and Roll Racing.
That's not nice.
that game though is really great. And I never beat it, I think, but I got to like the last level, but it would never save. I think there's something wrong with my Super Nintendo, or maybe Super Nintendo didn't save.
No,
it totally did. Mario saved. Yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, my Super Nintendo didn't save. Mm-hmm. And so you'd have to just sit there all day and try and get to the end of the game. It was the only way to do it. And so some games, they say, are like 20 hours of playtime.
Right.
So, okay, so 20 hours a day trying to get to the end every time. But
and is that like your music, do you think?
Well, I think the thing with that is it like introduced me to a lot of kinds of music. Because Rock and Roll Racing would have like, you know, George Thorogood and like just like real like classic rock stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'd never really heard it because my parents were not really into that kind of music and I wasn't exposed. So yeah, I think it kind of started my kind of sort of the thing of paying more attention to the music in games and then getting to the point where I wanted to soundtrack my own games and like later playing like, you know, Grand Theft Auto or something silly. And like you could go in and change all the MP3s in the file.
Right, cool.
Yeah, and so you could kind of make, you know, you get into a car and instead of it being the radio, it's like an MP3 you put in a folder.
Right.
And so it was a very cool way of like, I don't know, having some kind of interaction between the game and the sound. And I think, so from that kind of, that angle of just being more and more exposed to it and getting excited about the sounds in games and kind of really, I don't know, there's a rhythm to video games that I think matches very well with music. They kind of work on very different timescales, but somehow they kind of hit some kind of stride where they both lock in.
Yeah, there's also that timing factor, I think, because it depends how far you get along in the game. You're only going to hear certain types of sounds and the looping might begin at that point.
Yeah, sure.
Do you call it looping with your own sounds?
Yeah, I definitely play things repetitively. I tend to steer away from the word loop simply because it kind of implies some kind of, you know, computer automation, and everything I do is very like every sound is kind of placed precisely where it is, and even when something repeats, it's generally like every repeat is slightly different and put in a slightly different place in order
to make
things sit in a different way and kind of have a different rhythmic flow.
No, it's certainly you can sense it, or you know, you can hear it in your music. Waving the sounds, waving my hometown. I'm waving the skies, waving the white lines. You were talking about before, you're a programmer. Is that what you do now? Is that how you support yourself, or is your music being able to do that for you?
Mostly it's my music.
Fantastic.
The coding I do is generally creating music performance and production tools. So it's all very related around the music, you know. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a really hardcore programmer. I use this language called MaxMSP, which is graphical. So most people will look at that and be like, oh, that's not real programming. Because I can't write blocks and blocks of text. But yeah, I think that they kind of overlap very, very well. And kind of the idea of creating your own tools really opens up a lot of possibility in terms of what you can do sonically.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought so, because I was not being someone of a computer background or whatever. I wasn't sure what MIRV 2 was. I'm totally ignorant.
Yeah.
Went to your Facebook and I went, MIRV 2. Oops, what's that?
Yeah, no, that's the software I make. It's MLRV 2, but it's...
Oh, is it? Have I...
That's okay, yeah.
Oh, I must have missed about that. Oh.
It's probably very difficult. For some reason, everything's in all lowercase, so it all looks the same.
I know. Annoyance, indeed.
Yeah.
So the sounds that you make, the music that you make, you've got that program aside, the technical skills, plus you've had, guitar background, training, the fusion of jazz coming in there. And at 25, that's amazing.
Well, I don't know if it's amazing. It's just like, it's just my history.
Yeah.
it's just my life so far. I guess I haven't done a lot of other things that people might otherwise have done by my age.
Did you think
like that have a real job?
It's become a dream job, would you say?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, yeah? I'm very happy. It's a dream job bar the pay level, which is very, very...
Erratic.
Erratic. Random. And yeah, mostly subsistence. So...
That's rough.
Yeah, that's kind of what you do, you know? It's like, if that means I can make music every day and I can, perform for people, in front of people, I can make software, I build electronics and stuff as well. So it all kind of, I don't know, balances out really nicely. And at least for now, I'm very happy doing what I'm doing.
Good. So you were in the States.
Yeah.
You talked about that just quickly. How was that? The response, you said it's definitely bigger over there. What was the... vibe?
I guess there's a lot more, I think there's been a lot more exposure of this kind of sound over there for a longer period. And so playing shows, there's a lot less of the experience you had when you first heard it of being like, ooh, what's this? I don't really know what's going on. And especially with my live performance, which is very hands-on and maybe not immediately obvious what I'm doing in terms of the sound. And so I think that the thing that really struck me about America was how everybody that was there, as soon as you started playing, instantly knew what was going on. And they were like, oh, this is what's happening. And they could instantly appreciate the sound and appreciate the performance. And it wasn't so much of an introduction for so many people. It was more of like, here's a performance and here's a new set of sounds. And I think there was a really positive response to that. And a lot of people really got into that. And a lot of people... responded well. The audiences are quite similar to Melbourne, funnily enough. This is in Los Angeles, mostly.
Okay.
But similar to Melbourne in that they don't move a lot and they mostly just stand there and look at what's going on. And then afterwards they're like, wow, that was amazing. When they're actually watching, they're
very
just like,
inanimate.
staring at you blankly. And
you think,
oh, am I not connect? Like, am I not reaching you? Like, do you not get it? And then afterwards they're like, oh, that was it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Enthusiasm comes a bit later.
Yeah.
I think Melburnians, I've discovered that.
They don't want to look too, like, fanny up front. You
yeah.
know? They have to, like, be
no
reserved.
Mosh pit, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's some shows that do, you know. If you go to, like real hardcore gigs, stuff like that, like, it's great. You know, like, people get really into it. But, yeah, it's hard to get people moving. I guess I've been, over the last year or so, I've been playing a few club gigs, I guess.
Okay.
Which is a very interesting setting for me in that my music is not really the floor to the floor that people are expecting, which can be very challenging, but also it can mean people are a lot less inhibited and not necessarily because of drugs or alcohol or anything, but just they're in a setting where they're used to dancing and they're used to being more
the
animated
same
and lively.
Sort of rhythm and beat.
Yeah,
I guess.
Exactly. So it's kind of been really great to play to a different kind of audience like that.
Mm. Now, when you get a sort of an audience that's a bit of a challenge like that, because, like you said, it's kind of uniform and they're used to a certain style, I guess, take it for granted even. Do you ever have to compromise? Do you ever have to suddenly, if I don't change something soon, I'm going to lose them. Does that ever happen?
Well, I guess that if I'm going to have to change what I'm doing to get people interested, then I kind of don't mind losing them, I guess, is where I would come from. You know, it's because if they're not going to be into what I'm doing, then they maybe won't ever get into it. Definitely there's levels you go to. And, you know, if I'm playing a gig that's oriented at like a particular different style, like different styles of music, then I can play very different tunes. And I'll structure my set list and the songs that I'm thinking of playing very much in tune with what the audience is going to be and what they're expecting. So I think there's definitely some kind of leeway that I can give, but I would never say I have to compromise my art or anything like that. It's all just about a conversation with an audience, I think.
Yeah. You certainly wouldn't want to do that because then it's not you.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's
trying to find the little bit of what you do that they really like.
Yeah.
You know? It's always about that search.
I guess it's good to know beforehand, get a briefing of where you're going to be playing.
Yeah.
What the demographic might be, and that kind of get a heads up, basically.
Yeah. I think this show, The Late Bit Show, is going to be an interesting one because I don't really know what to expect. I'm thinking.
Have you been down to the Game Masters?
I went, I think, 2 years ago. But yeah, I haven't been down this year. So I'm thinking, like,
I reckon you should do a little bit of a reconnaissance.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Well, at least to see the layout and see the different games that are actually on display and exhibited. That might give you a bit of a heads up.
Definitely. Yeah, I was planning on going down really early before the show, but I think that maybe a separate trip is in order.
There's some great arcade games. I didn't get very far because, I mean, I sort of got stuck trying to beat Asteroids and I still can't. How can this clumsy, clunky machine do this to me? I mean, all the emotions come out.
Yeah.
And eventually the security guard did too. you know, I realize it's probably worth thousands of dollars, but gosh, it's frustrating when you're losing. I hate that.
I think music's the same. If you're playing a show and people aren't getting it, it's sort of like, oh, come on.
You can't punch them, though.
Yeah.
And you can't punch
it's
a
true.
Machine.
You can punch the machine that you're playing, though. You can just be like, oh, what's going on? Like, make better sound.
They've got a really odd one there. I think it's called Reactor.
Okay.
Don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, I haven't.
I really don't know what they were thinking when they made that one. No, it's actually probably one of the first ones. It's like an arcade, you know, stand to one. But the speaker, it's got speakers. I think in the old days they didn't even really have a proper speaker system, and maybe inside the metal box thing. But with this one, they've actually got the speakers on the outside, but at eye level, like ear or eye level.
Yeah.
And it was just weird. Like, it's coming right at the noise. And the actual sounds are amazing. They're gorgeous.
Great. Yeah.
And I think I've never heard. Just a bizarre game. Check it out.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Maybe I should go down and try and record some of these sounds.
They might have something. Should ask Claire.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
She's a go-to person. Yeah. Yay, Claire at Acme. We love you.
Yeah.
Yay. Actually, I might have to edit that out. It's probably not considered compliant. Right. I'm not sure.
That'll be fine.
What can people expect that you're going to play from the album, Commitments? And
I'll play a few tunes from that. I think they're probably my most poppy in some ways, especially with the vocal-oriented tunes.
Because they are saying it's synth pop, so I guess they are expecting a little bit bouncy or
And I think there's there's a certain playfulness to my music that I think somehow grabs onto that kind of genre, if you will. I think mostly it'll be like light and playful and fun music, I guess.
Okay.
Rather than necessarily going, you know, really deep into strange sounds and really heavy things or anything. It'll be much more of like a fun party more
They've
so
got
than
Dance Central there actually.
Great.
So yeah, I think that and Guitar Hero, so yeah.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Do you like, do you play those games at all?
I played DDR a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Which I was never very good at, and I always got made fun of by my friends at school, but loved it. I don't know. I like dancing even though I'm terrible. There's something about dancing that, like, I don't know, brings out something.
So we can expect some dancing on the 27th of September?
Yeah, I'm kind of known to throw my hair around a little bit.
Oh, right.
Which
is
can be very
Is this the heavy metal influence coming through?
Well, I don't even know. I think it's just getting a little bit too into it. I think that's a good thing, though.
That's all right. Let your hair down, everybody.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool. Now, this is how many albums have you actually done?
I haven't done my homework. This is my first full length.
Full length.
So cool. I've done a couple little EPs and things before, but this is the first kind of serious tune.
And how long did it take to put together and bring it together?
I mean, I wrote it in about 6 weeks, I'd say, in terms of putting all the songs together. Some of them were a bit older, like some were a couple years old, but I've actually finished it kind of, you know, it took like 8 months after I finished it before it got released. So it was quite a long process. I mean, it's probably about a little over a year old now in terms of what's been written.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Now, quickly, we'll just talk about, before I let you go, because look, I think we're doing fine. Are you happy to keep talking?
Yeah, for sure.
You okay?
Yeah.
Cool. So when we're thinking about the music side of things, influences would be, you've talked about jazz, but are there any artists around in the last, I don't know, few years that you find a similarity or something that you go, wouldn't mind collaborating? Have you ever collaborated with people?
I've collaborated with a lot of people, mostly, I guess, how do you say, I can't think of the word. People that work alongside you in a more general sense.
Alliance? Allegiance? No.
It doesn't
collaboration.
Matter.
Collaboration.
Yeah. Basically, I've collaborated with a few people, mostly whom are local people, friends of mine, people that are quite close to me. And so it's never really been about trying to reach a new audience or trying to kind of, you know, meeting my idols or anything. Like, I find that I'm very kind of flippant and not consistent with my musical taste. Like, I'll often be really into something 1 year and then, you know, or like at one point, and then a few months later, I'm just like, oh, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
So I think it's very hard in terms of influences. I mean, I listen to a lot of 70s music, like a lot of fusion stuff and a lot of synthesizer music and a lot of kind of those older things that I think were really uncovering a lot of interesting harmonic things and just in terms of the aesthetic of sound in general, the way that like certain sounds have some kind of depth to them that in a lot of modern music I don't hear so much. So it's more kind of about the sound itself rather than necessarily the harmony and those kind of things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Some of the 70s music, which ones would you, you know, say were the biggest influence?
I listened to, who should I say? This guy, Piero Umiliani, who is a Italian composer who mostly wrote soundtracks. Lots of spaghetti westerns and those kind of things.
Okay. So a bit like Sergio a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit more.
Yeah, a little. And Ennio Morricone as well.
Yeah, of course.
But Piero Umiliani also had this incredible catalogue of synthesizer music that he wrote that was just completely groundbreaking and making incredible sounds with really interesting synthesizers, but still very melodic and like really catchy. You'd probably play it to a lot of people nowadays and they think it had just been written. Like, it's that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Also, this guy, Swedish guy, Bo Hansson, is a big kind of influence. More kind of progressive, I guess, prog music.
Yeah.
Prog rock.
That was quite, in the 70s.
Very 70s.
Like new and
people
like that, I guess.
Yeah.
The German side of things, which you can hear even on some, that sort of influence on even things like David Bowie on the Berlin albums that he did.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, Low, is it Low? Even Station to Station is a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they're all like epic. They're epic journeys
it's
in
like
the mind.
It's rock thing as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of
yeah,
all
kind
of
rock.
Kind of sits in together.
It does. It's brilliant stuff. Cool. And okay, so commitments has been done. What happens next for you?
I'm
what other projects have you got?
Currently working on a a library record, essentially, which is basically a record that is more to kind of backdrop things, but it's all about making synthesizer music and making mostly things about sound rather than necessarily being about, drums and rhythm and melody and stuff. It's more of a kind of tool for other musicians to kind of sample and take bits out of and take melodies out of and stuff. So that's kind of more of a private project, I guess. And then apart from that, I'm working on some collaborations with friends and things. But for now, I'm kind of just trying to work on the live show and kind of take that to the next level and building things at home. And I'm building a little synthesizer at the moment. So that's kind of my main task at the moment.
Yeah. And now, have you heard of a Bellini?
Bellini.
I'm saying that because previously I was speaking to Kikuyu and she found it was an electronic synthesizer from a keyboard thingy, Italian, that she found in a garage sale. Yeah. And that's what it's based on.
Okay, sure.
So it's those double deck, whatever you call it.
Dual manual, I think is the technical term.
But it's made out of chipboard and it's brown and apparently it's not as attractive as that piece of artwork. She found that as a freak of nature finding something like that. And the whole album is based on the sounds that has made. And
yeah, great. That's really cool. I think there's so much gold out there if you can search for
it. Yeah.
But you have to get really lucky, you have to search for weeks and months and sometimes years before you find that one gem that you're just like, oh, that's exactly what I've been searching for. I mean, it's the same thing with, secondhand shopping and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it takes a long time to find what you want.
Yeah. Like, I remember seeing a old Space Invaders arcade game and I thought, oh, look at that. It's still in working order. And I think it was only about $500. I thought, oh, that's probably a steal.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I think they've got 125 playable games alone at the Acme Game Masters. So
amazing. I'm going to get lost for hours.
You are. They're going to have to drag
me away to actually get on stage. I'm like, no.
What time are you on? I mean, it says from 6 to 9. So are you're on?
I'm not really sure.
You're on first. Well, you're one of the first people they mention here.
Who knows?
Galapagos.
I think it's often quite nice to just say, oh, it's 6 to 9:30.
Yep.
And then people can come for the whole time. And if they haven't seen what they want, they have to stick around.
They can go downstairs, play a few games, try and beat Asteroids finally, get frustrated and come up and have a dance.
Exactly.
Get rid of that, pent up gamer, fatigue and anger.
Yeah, dance is the best medicine for video game anger.
Exactly. Especially if Dance Central's busy. Yeah. Go up and see Galapagos. I'm finally getting it right. Galapagos, and that's at Late Bit, Thursday, 27th of September, from 6 p.m. It's going to be fantastic. Cuckoo's going to be there. They've got DJ Zeal. Not aware of who they are, but apparently it's you're going to be doing some DIY. Do it yourself. Multi-layered musical creations.
All right.
That's you.
That's me.
That's
multi-layered musical creations. I can definitely do that.
Cool. Thanks very much for coming into the studio and talking to us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful view, as always.
Look, fantastic, because we don't normally do music types of themes for our show, but when we do, we try to get some good stuff, and I think we have tonight. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Galapagos.
It's sci-fi and Squeam Gym, but not as we know it. Enjoy 94.9.
One station in all the world, a chosen station.
To boldly go where no show has gone before.
Sci-fi and Squeam.
Sci-fi and Squeam.
Tuesday night from 10 p.m.
On Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.